This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. And we come to you February 19th, this Tuesday, for the continuation of the WBAI Fund Drive. And it's a great privilege to be following Money Masters and the discussion about the banking system, because that leads in perfectly to our premium 9/11 permanent war and the repressive apparatus of the state. Is martial law on the agenda? With the decomposition of capitalism, the collapse of capitalism, that is when the issue of martial law comes to the forefront. And that is why, since 9/11 in particular, we have the elimination of many of the cherished democratic rights, and we have the increase in the militarization of the police and the extension of policing to the U.S. Army instead of and the military, instead of functioning just overseas, establishing further coordination with police and National Guard here in the United States, and actually setting up a Northern Command to have the military functioning within the national borders of the United States and not just abroad. Again, 9/11 permanent war and the repressive apparatus of the state is martial law on the agenda. Ralph is in transit. He's on an airplane on his way to Canada, where he's lecturing about the issues of the underlying politics of 9/11 and also the hidden history of Zionism. And we hope to get him on the phone later in the program. Meanwhile, we'll be hearing an excerpt from Ralph from this incredible lecture that Ralph and Frank Morales and I did in Berkeley a few months ago, and we created this premium, 9/11 Permanent War, and the repressive apparatus of the state is martial law on the agenda, because this was a subject that we knew would be of interest to each and every one of the Taking Aim listeners and those beyond the Taking Aim listeners in the WBAI community. This is a 3-CD set for your contribution of $100. It's over 3 hours, and it includes a presentation by myself, Maya Schoen, on the underlying politics of 9/11 and the repressive apparatus of the state, and also from Ralph, particularly about the decomposition of capitalism and what it means in terms of establishing a repressive apparatus of the state, and then by Frank Morales, the two-time winner of Project Censored, particularly for his work on the militarization of the police force in the United States. Frank Morales is in the forefront of this work, and Frank gives an exceptional lecture, even combining the issue of the homelessness, of the homeless into the topic, and that is also on this CD. Again, at the very end, as I've mentioned in prior weeks, we have a one-hour discussion with the audience, a discussion that could have gone on for 3 and 4 hours had we had the time that evening. And I'm sure you'll enjoy participating in that discussion, listening, and then contacting us with your comments. Again, this is a 3-CD set for your contribution to WBAI, $100. It goes hand in hand with the other premiums that have been offered here on WBAI. We're so glad to hear the enthusiasm for Money Masters, and we hope that it continues on this hour with the Taking Aim premium. We're going to play 3 excerpts, an excerpt from my presentation, from Ralph's presentation, and from Frank's presentation. Some of you heard this a couple of weeks ago. Some of you may have missed it, and we hope that you enjoy it this time. Those of you who heard it before, it's still going to sound fresh. And remember, all this and much more is yours for your gift to WBAI. That is your gift to yourself, $100 contribution, and the number to call, 212-209-2950. I'm going to come back between the excerpts to remind you of the phone number, and please dial while the excerpts are being played, because this incredible program is going to be in your home very soon. 212-209-2950. I have it edited. We're getting it to WBAI. It'll be copied right away. And remember, you can make your contribution with credit cards, debit cards, checks, money orders, and downright cash online. 212-209-2950. Michael?
Tonight, I'm going to talk about the repressive apparatus of the state, the context of it, what it is about 9/11 that leads us to the repressive apparatus of the state. I went back to a program that we did 1 year after 9/11. The first anniversary is we had a show called 9/11 False Flag Operation, and it began like this. In the immediate aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, authorities already were sounding the alarm that a terrorist network was involved, and they specified Osama bin Laden, an Islamic fundamentalist in the Al-Qaeda network. The authorities did not disclose, however, that this very network had been established by the Central Intelligence Agency, and that Osama bin Laden and his associate, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, had received $6 billion from U.S. intelligence agencies, specifically to create a terrorist network, not merely in Afghanistan, but in Pakistan and beyond, in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and the surrounding area. The authorities were quick to point the finger at a demonic figure. But if we look carefully at the press at the time and in the years since, we find that, in fact, the U.S. government, its intelligence agencies, and its spokespersons were not telling the truth. 9/11 is a false flag operation. And that is an intelligence term that signifies that the blame has been placed elsewhere to conceal U.S. government authorship. Right away, right after 9/11, in October, less than 2 weeks later, you had on ABC This Week, Air Force General Richard Myers, who at the time was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And this is when they were considering that they were going to attack Afghanistan. They were going to take out this terrorist network of Osama bin Laden. But there was a headline in the newspaper right after ABC This Week, and it said, quote, a top U.S. officer said Sunday, Afghanistan is only a small piece of the U.S. campaign that could last more than a lifetime. Now, Air Force General Richard Myers stated at the time that the Pentagon, quote, had started to prepare targets in Iraq. This is a global war on terrorism and weapons of mass destruction, he said, and Afghanistan is only one small piece. Of course, we're thinking very broadly. Since World War II, we haven't thought this broadly about a campaign. General Myers at the time was asked about a comment by Vice President Dick Cheney, who had said that the campaign, this long war on terror, quote, may never end, at least not in our lifetime, end quote. This is right after the events of 9/11. Now, that comment by Dick Cheney had been cited by the Washington Post and was published on October 23rd, a month and a half. I think this is correct, Meyer said. This is going to be a long, hard-fought conflict, and it will be global in scale, and it won't be just military. It's going to be all the instruments of our national power. Look at what they were telling us in the moment. In the moment, they were saying this was a global war. It was going to go on throughout our lifetime and maybe beyond. But more of that, more, that it was going to involve all the instruments of national power. And that doesn't just mean international extension of the hegemony of capitalism. It means using the instruments of national power against the people of the United States. First and foremost, you have to fund this vast military apparatus. $500 billion, 50% of the discretionary budget for basic military spending. More than $10 billion a month now is diverted for the occupation of Iraq and the ongoing attack against Afghanistan. $10 billion accumulates $500 billion to be spent so far on this military adventure. Think about what that means when you say more than 50% of discretionary funding. The non-discretionary funding is Social Security, which they have been raiding. It is the Medicare-specific taxes, the money that should go for health services, the money that should go for education, the money that goes for schools. All that is diverted. When that is diverted, people will resist. And that is why they talk about the instruments of national power. These are long-standing plans, and I recommend that you read Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, because in it, Ralph is meticulous about describing the long-standing plans for the occupation of Iraq. Referring to Robert Tucker, 1975, seizing Arab oil fields by direct military intervention, where Tucker describes the Arab shoreline of the Gulf, a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. That is the Middle East and their long-standing plans. We saw in the London Times where the defense editor, Michael Evans, on September 20th, 2001, wrote, quote, secret plans for a 10-year war. Well, he was being optimistic. Dick Cheney and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, 10 years wasn't enough for them. And he said this 10-year war was called Operation Noble Eagle. It was a combined plan of the U.S. and Great Britain. The BBC, September 18th, 2001, said, quote, the U.S. planned the attack on the Taliban and military action against Osama bin Laden in July, long before the events of 9/11. But they couldn't pull it through, as we know now, unless they had a false flag, unless they could get the people of the United States riled up and saying, we must go on the attack. Why Afghanistan? Why Central Asia? The Oil and Gas Journal in the 1990s stated, quote, by 2050, Central Asia will account for more than 80% of U.S. oil. We think of the Middle East when we think of oil outside the confines of territorial United States, but we don't think of Central Asia. But the Oil and Gas Journal understood the importance. It said Central Asia represents the world's last great frontier for geological survey and analysis, offering opportunities for investment, production, transportation, and refining of trillions of dollars of oil and gas services. But Central Asia was Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, and some of these stans were part of the former Soviet Union. A first and foremost was the breakup of the Soviet Union. And the next step was how to occupy, how to control, how to have hegemony in this area. And that, as you see in the Oil and Gas Journal, gives you the context, the absolute context for this world reach. In Congress itself in the early 1990s, there were congressional hearings, H.R. 2867. That was the House version of what's called the Silk Road Strategy Act. for a Eurasian energy transport corridor, a pipeline south from Central Asia to the Indian Ocean. This pipeline has to go through Afghanistan. Now you can see clearly, if you follow the plans, the capitalist plans for control of the world's resources, you can predict where their wars are going to take place. 1990s, they're telling you they have to have control of Afghanistan. It may take them some time, just as Robert Tucker, writing in the 1970s, you go from one administration to another. Remember, we're talking about from Carter all the way through Clinton and beyond. It doesn't matter, Democratic or Republican administration, it's the same discretion.
This was an excerpt by me, Maya Schoen, from 9/11, Permanent War and the Repressive Apparatus of the State. Is martial law on the agenda? It's just the introduction to this three-hour, incredible, three-CD presentation by Ralph Schoenman, myself, and Frank Morales, the wonderful Frank Morales. 212-209-2950. It contains so much history and analysis and political analysis, so important at this moment in history, so important for your organizing efforts, so important for your decisions about which way forward, so important for deciding how to defend our rights. And that's one of the things that Frank discusses, and we continue in the long discussion period, is what we can do as individuals and what we can do collectively to make sure that martial law is not imposed in the United States, and what we can do should martial law be imposed in the United States. I want to go back at the moment and remind you, 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Please get on the line. And also to remind you again that we're going to try to reach Ralph, who's in transit. There was a delay with the airlines, and we will try to get him on in the later part of the program. 212-209-2950. We want to thank all of you who stepped forward in the past 2 weeks, and to remind you that next week, the last week of the fund drive, we are going to be on for an extended three-hour period. That's it. Now is the moment to make your choice. Now is the moment to step forward and say, we support WBAI. As Michael says, it's commercial free. As we all say, we really appreciate it. And because it is commercial free, we depend upon each and every one of us as listeners and as volunteers to sustain this effort. 212-209-2950 for our gift to you from Taking Aim. 9/11, Permanent War, and the Repressive Apparatus of the State. Is martial law on the agenda? I want to go back again to Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the National Security Advisor under Jimmy Carter, and who came out with the amazing speech before Congress where he broke ranks in the ruling class and voiced his opposition to the continued assault on Iraq, mainly because of what Brzezinski sees as the impending doom for capitalism should the assault go on, the trillions of dollars that are being diverted to Iraq, and what that means for the economy, and what it also means in terms of the necessity for a crackdown here in the United States and beyond. But it is Brzezinski who, by the way, is a leading consultant for Barack Obama. It is Brzezinski, the National Security Advisor under Carter, who spelled out what is taking place, spelled it out in his book entitled The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives, which was published in 1997, 4 years before 9/11, only 4 years before. And in it he says, America's global primacy is directly dependent upon how long and how effectively its preponderance on the Eurasian continent is sustained. That power that dominates Eurasia would control two of the world's three most advanced and economically productive regions. Most of the world's physical wealth is there, both in its enterprises and underneath its soil. Eurasia accounts for 60% of the world's gross national product and about 75% of the world's known energy resources. The Eurasian Balkans are infinitely more important, Brzezinski writes, as the potential economic prize, with an enormous concentration of natural gas and oil reserves in the region. The Central Asian region and the Caspian Sea Basin are known to contain reserves of natural gas and oil that dwarf those of Kuwait, the Gulf of Mexico, and the North Sea. And this was sustained by the U.S. Energy Information Administration that prepared a series of studies, and it showed that the Caspian Basin holds 200 billion barrels of oil, 33 times the holding of Alaska's North Slope, and a current value of $4 trillion. It's important to understand this analysis. It's important to understand how the ruling class works, because if you don't, what happens, what unfolds day after day seems like a mystery. And it isn't when you really look at the underlying politics and you look what the rulers say about their plans, as Brzezinski spells forth here. Isn't that what unfolded? Isn't that what unfolded with the incredible efforts of Brzezinski and the ruling class to break up the Soviet Union, to have control of Afghanistan, to have control of Pakistan? And this is important to understand today with the elections in Pakistan, the rebellion of the people against the hard hand and the drive of the United States. 212-209-2950. Please call and make your contribution to Taking Aim and WBAI. 9/11, permanent war, and the repressive apparatus of the state is martial law on the agenda. Again, 212-209-2950. Each week, Ralph and I prepare special shows for you that we bring to you over WBAI. It is WBAI that is our mother station. It's our mother ship. And through WBAI, our voice goes out throughout the world. Without WBAI, people in over 77 countries around the world wouldn't hear us. The prisoners in the New Jersey and the New York systems wouldn't hear us. You wouldn't hear us without WBAI. And that's why I urge you now, please contribute. 9/11, permanent war, and the repressive apparatus of the state is martial law on the agenda. 3-CD set, 3 hours of lecture, of discussion, and for your contribution of $100, which you can make over time or you can put on your credit card. 212-209-2950. Michael, shall we go on to the next excerpt?
Yes, Maya, let's go on to the next excerpt. We have three calls on the line now. You're listening to Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. As Maya said, Ralph will be joining us. He is in transit right now, but we'll have him on just for a few minutes before the end of the program. But right now, take this opportunity to join WBAI support. Taking Aim, 212-209-2950. Remember, you can use your Visa card, MasterCard, or American Express. We have volunteers standing by ready to take your calls right now. WBAI in the midst of its winter fundraising drive. We'd love to hear from you. We have, as I said, volunteers standing by. So make your calls to WBAI right now for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. There are four calls on the line now. Join these callers and make your pledges of support, financial support, to keep this commercial-free, listener-supported radio station on the air so that we can continue to bring you programs like Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. We'll go back. Okay. Okay, we'll get you. That was Ralph Schoenman Maya calling in.
Great.
And so he'll be joining us in a moment. He just landed, and so we'll play this excerpt, and we'll have Ralph and you on right after that. So stay tuned. There's more to come. More Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, 29 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock in New York City at 99.5 FM.
Maya, thanks so much, brothers and sisters, for coming out this evening. It's really, for us, a great and continuous gratification to be in interaction with activists, people who are concerned about how we confront the realities of the criminalization of state power in our society. We are going to address tonight the apparatus of repression in relation to its most recent pretext for our ruling class, namely the events of September 11th, which we, over a period of time, have characterized as treason at the top. Many of you, having been involved in looking at the nature of power in our society over a period of time, are familiar with other events in our more recent history that compare with those of September 11th. For example, the assassination of the head of state, John F. Kennedy, not to mention the systematic elimination of mass leaders such as Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, and the virtual army of activists associated with black struggle, even the material witnesses to the crimes of our rulers who have been part of the litany of the dead and the removed at the hands of those who maintain power in our society. And as we often attempt to demonstrate and to describe, it's a hugely concentrated power apparatus that has hegemony in our country. 1% owns more than 95% of the rest of us combined. The actual number of people who make decisions about economic, political, and military affairs in our society, notwithstanding those who are the public relations intermediaries for this, is extraordinarily small. The former chairman of Avis and American Express, as I like so often to quote, Robert Townsend, calculated that 5,000 people control what he called the commanding heights of the U.S. economy. They averaged 14 corporate directorships per individual. And in his inimitable description, he stated, they look upon this country as their own private whorehouse and each president as their personal towel boy. That is not hyperbole. That is the character of power concentrated in the hands of corporate and finance capital in our society. The governance, the state, is a facade. Decisions are not made through the formal institutions. When Marxists and socialists speak about bourgeois democracy, it's not that they are in any way impugning democratic determination of decisions, but they're describing a structure in which form occurs, but without substance. The nominal institutions that are the arenas in which decisions are to be made are just facades, because power is concentrated elsewhere, and the state is but the coercive instrument of those who have monopolized this apparatus of power. And I do this because when we look at such things as the events of September 11th, 2001, notably because that criminal activity on the part of those in power is the little continuation of how they have always governed in our society. Every major undertaking, whether it's the expansion west and the extermination of the indigenous inhabitants, or that which followed from this, hegemony over markets on a global scale, it always has proceeded on the basis of pretexts, of rationalizations for long-prepared decisions. 9/11 emerges out of that. There has to be an ideological rationale for decisions and for policymaking on the part of an illicit handful of people who rule without mediating that rule through approval on the part of those who are affected by it. And that ideological rationale for their politics and their policies takes various forms. The danger of subversion, in which any opposition is impugned as illicit. They are agents of a foreign power. They are demonic others. They are communists. They are this, they are that, they are whatever. And every war of predation is based upon a defensive response to this presumptive challenge to their power, which they identify with the national interest. 9/11 is no different. Except that we have now a new rationale to replace that which had been developed over a period of 70 and 80 years, virtually since the Bolshevik Revolution. With the decomposition of the Soviet Union, that was the category of terror. Something put in place and prepared since the mid-70s. Every major spokesperson for capital involved in its unfolding, every administration since 1964 already anticipating this. The Zionist state is but the local legatee of imperial policy, preparing the category of terror as the rationale for these undertakings. Look, we know, for example, with respect, to come back for a moment to the execution of John F. Kennedy, that the Mannlicher Carcano 6.5-millimeter rifle had no ammunition live made for it after 1945, that it was a bolt-action rifle, no automatic trajectory, no fixed sight, physically incapable of expending the number of shots that were fired at the President of the United States. Wherever you look at the physical evidence that pertained to these events, and that's certainly true of September 11th, the laws of physics have to be altered to accommodate the official fiction with respect to these events. They don't stand the most elementary scrutiny, as so many have done so well in demonstrating and documenting. Hydrocarbon fires cannot reach a degree such as to compromise steel and reduce enforced concrete to pulverized powder, unless the laws of physics were reversed. The massive evidence that pertains to the collapse of those towers is, of course, elementary in understanding these events. Not to mention the fact that the people who are accused of having hijacked airplanes are people trained on Cessnas and Piper Cubs who have no remote capacity to handle airplanes of that character, beyond which the maneuvers undertaken by those aircraft, as has been so meticulously shown, are not compatible with pilot control. But when we have looked at these events over the years, many of us, what we've attempted to emphasize is this. The underlying politics of these events are what illuminate them for our understanding. We have to tie these events not merely to the physical evidence, which is, I don't in any way demean the importance of demonstrating the physical incompatibility of the evidence that pertains to these events and the official fiction, but to illuminate these undertakings, these events for our masses, for our population, for ourselves, we need to see the hand of governance and intelligence in their unfolding. Every single person associated with these events has a connection to U.S. intelligence. The putative hijackers are people trained at U.S. military installations. The hands of intelligence and governance are all over them. And consequently, the category of terror, which becomes the demonic rationale for the wars of predation that flow from all this, could not be put into motion without, as so many people have cited, the catastrophic event analogous to Pearl Harbor to provide the basis for policies in every administration's playbook since the early 60s. Every single one of these administrations pursuing these policies and requiring a catalytic event of this nature. It's not only Condoleezza Rice, it's not only Zbigniew Brzezinski who have articulated this. You'll find that Lawrence Mosher in 1975 is talking about the need to provide a pretext for seizing Arab oil for the 100,000-man quick strike force. We will have to find, he said, a boogeyman that is brought in in order to sell this idea, this plan, this operation. And he may not translate the same in Arabic as he does in English. There's no ambiguity here.
I'm going to say a few things about the subject of domestic operations. I want to talk a bit about that, and then we'll talk some about martial law, and then maybe what it is that we might do in the event of martial law.
Welcome back to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Ralph, you're in Canada now preparing
yes,
to lecture
I...
on the very subject, the underlying politics of 9/11.
That's right, Maya. Treason at the top and the underlying politics of 9/11. I'm giving that talk tomorrow. Tonight we're dealing with the hidden history of Zionism and the imperial project for the Middle East. Break up every Arab and Middle East nation into its ethnic and religious components by way of seizing their resources. And, of course, you need something like 9/11 to carry that off.
That's right, Ralph, and that's why 9/11 was a topic for this lecture in Berkeley when Frank Morales was here for his second Project Censored Award for his incredible work on the militarization of the police. And the second award had to do with the his work on the revision of the Insurrection Act in order to make it possible for the president to, without any word from Congress and without any acceptance of any of the state legislatures or governors, to call in federal troops to set up virtual martial law in a community. And Frank did the foremost work on that. He's in the forefront and alerted the country to this. 9/11, permanent war and a repressive apparatus of the state, is martial law on the agenda. And we say this seriously, is martial law on the agenda? 212-209-2950. Please, this is a 3-CD set, yours for contribution to WBAI, $100. Ralph?
Yes, Maya, and of course what we detail, brothers and sisters, is the longstanding preparations for martial law and for executive dictatorship in the United States, because, after all, it is not merely the fact that the United States is engaged in permanent war, which is essentially cannibalizing the infrastructure of our society, but it is generating a deep and a crisis for which there's no exit for capitalism. $33 trillion in value have been lost by investors since January of this year, according to the Financial Times. The economic crisis that is now confronting capitalism is precisely why events such as 9/11 are necessary to terrorize the population. And that's why executive order after executive order is being issued in a sort of orgiastic frenzy by Bush and his cronies, notwithstanding the fact that the public sees it increasingly for what it is. On July 17th, brothers and sisters, Bush issued an executive order which stipulates that those who oppose or undermine U.S. policy, including economic policy, can have their property seized, can be taken off for arbitrary arrest without due process, without entitlement to counsel. And the executive order of July 17th further stipulates that the friends and family members who would seek to help out those who have their property taken from them, even to lend them $5, even to provide them with a coat, even to let them use a car, become liable to the same penalty. This is the most draconian declaration of intent by the President of the United States, without a mumbling word emanating from a member of Congress, let alone these candidates, these so-called presidential candidates who, for whatever their rhetoric, mimic the category of terror and the necessity for crackdown. And brothers and sisters, these talks lay it all out, chapter and verse. They document, but most importantly, they not just document what we've been describing here, but they we discuss here what is to be done? How do we organize against this? How do we mobilize trade unions? How do we build mass activity such that we defy the orders to stay indoors? We declare that we will not accept the premise, that we will not abide by the demand. And by doing that in numbers and by organizing to do it now, we prepare for the resistance that will burst the capacity of this regime to sustain its control. Brothers and sisters, join us in this effort. Support this work. Support WBAI and Free Speech Radio. Get the CDs, the DVDs, and prepare for the struggles ahead.
Ralph, these are audio CDs. 212-209-2950. You can listen in your car. You can listen at work. You can listen at home. And stop and start. Listen to part of it. Listen to all 3 hours at once as if you were at the lecture. 212-209-2950. Invite people over and make it an evening so you can have a discussion about this subject. 9/11, permanent war and the repressive apparatus of the state. Is martial law on the agenda? Please get on the phone now. Don't wait for the last minute. Get those phones ringing. Some of you were not able in the first week. There weren't enough volunteers. There are enough volunteers now in the studios, WBAI studios, to help you to take your call. 212-209-2950. The American people are getting fed up with the terror apparatus, and this was so clear in the case of the Liberty City 7, Ralph, something we discussed on Taking Aim. These were the Haitian immigrants in Miami who were arrested. They were accused of trying to help Al-Qaeda bomb the Sears Tower in Chicago and the FBI headquarters in Miami. And last December, the six trials of the Liberty 7 were declared a mistrial. I say the six trials because the jury acquitted one of the people outright. And when the U.S. judge kept asking the jury to go back and go back again, and yet the jury said they could not reach a verdict. After 9 days of deliberation and 3 notifications from the jury, they said they were unable to reach a decision, and now, just a few days ago, they went back to court, and I'm sure it's going to be another mistrial because this was such a fabricated case with no evidence of trying to build up a sense that there was this terror network in the United States. And it's important that the government create this furor, this uproar about a terror network in order to slip in all the aspects of the repressive apparatus of the state. Ralph?
Well, I want to emphasize, brothers and sisters, that in the talks that we presented here, and notably in Frank Morales' designation of what he calls spatial deconcentration, you see precisely the dry run in New Orleans with Katrina. Because there you had Blackwater, there you had martial law actually declared, there you had the Army Times declaring that the black population of New Orleans was regarded as what they called Little Somalia. And what you had in essence was the destruction of the economic and social basis of life for the working class of New Orleans and notably its black inhabitants. Spatial deconcentration, Blackwater and martial law. And what has emerged from that, brothers and sisters? The black reconstruction movement, a call and a demand for transformation of the United States, a call for independent politics, a call for a black party, a call for a break with the Democratic and Republican parties both, a mobilization, Cynthia McKinney taking a prominent part and formally breaking now with the Democratic Party, mobilizations that begin out of the Gulf, an area that was devastated larger in square miles than Great Britain itself, from Mississippi throughout Louisiana. It's the little beginning, brothers and sisters, of that fight back and that resistance that we discuss on these CDs. Support this effort, participate in it from New Orleans to Harlem, from Harlem to Oakland and to Compton and Los Angeles, from across the ghettos and inner cities of the United States to the working class struggles at the point of production. This fight back is beginning now, brothers and sisters.
And
arm yourselves with information. Prepare for the battles ahead. We will be tested as never before.
Again, 212-209-2950. And Ralph, let's mention again, as we did last week, the effort that is centered in New York City, the effort to bring the truth to 9/11. And that is the goal, to have 45,000 petition signatures by the end of April. We need 100 volunteers to contact www.nyc911initiative.org or to call 646-537-1755. So we're giving you two telephone numbers today, 1-646-537-1755, to volunteer to be on the inside of the ballot drive for a 9/11 commission, a true 9/11 commission, of which Ralph is a leading figure and Frank Morales is a leading figure in this effort to have a true 9/11 impartial investigation. And we are also giving you the other phone number, the key number to call, 212-209-2950. Contact WBAI, please. And we have the gift for you. The gift of 9/11, permanent war, and the repressive apparatus of the state is martial law on the agenda. As Mark Bilk, our webmaster, says, it isn't really a question that we pose, is martial law on the agenda. What we do in these CDs is show you how the ruling class is setting the stage for martial law and what they are doing little by little and with big steps, both little and big steps, to impose martial law. Should it be required? Should there be an uprising of the people in the United States, as there must be inevitably? Ralph?
Yes, indeed, Marianne. Indeed, martial law is preceded by a series of measures that are authorizing the military to control and to operate and administer cities. Every city within 200 miles of the coastal areas of the United States has been designated under the Northern Command for military control. Every time there's the prospect of a pandemic, a viral pandemic that is engineered in U.S. labs, the so-called camps for isolation for those affected are well in preparation, brothers and sisters. That is the skeleton, the architecture of the fascist state, well and energetically in place. And it comes together as well with the trial of Lynn Stewart, who was, after all, the lawyer for the framed Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, with the charge that he was responsible for the blowing up of the World Trade Center in 1993, an operation of the FBI and the Mossad, as amply documented in our own broadcast on Taking Aim. And here Lynn Stewart, facing prison, is being set up as the victim because she functions as the attorney for the falsely accused.
And Ralph, it is not just an attack on Lynn Stewart. It is an attack on any attorney who decides to defend anyone who is in opposition to the government. It's a warning to attorneys. Do not take on the defense of dissidents. It's a primary warning. This is a seminal trial.
Yes,
again, 212-209-2950. We're in the closing moments of this hour, and we need to get as many people on the line as possible, 212-209-2950. Don't delay. Many people say, well, I want to hear Ralph and Maya, and I'm going to wait until the program's over before I call. No. You can listen and dial. You can chew gum and walk at the same time. So please get on the phone, 212-209-2950.
Maya, we could, but Gerald Ford could not. But notwithstanding that, what we, I think, have to keep in mind is the following. What do we learn from all this, brothers and sisters? That we can't persuade these people, we can't influence these people, we can't change these people, We can't contain these people. Those in power have to be removed from power. It is illicit power. It is treason at the top. It is a criminal ruling class that not only oppresses and exploits our many, but prepares to subjugate us in the process. It's a fight back that has to come. It's the ammunition of knowledge and of the political will that has to be our most prized possession, brothers and sisters. And that, in our judgment, is the importance of free speech radio, the central role of Pacifica and of WBAI. And we hope that Taking Aim is playing its due part in that undertaking, brothers and sisters. But you are the subject. We, together, are going to change history. Arm yourselves with the political knowledge and the information we need. Support this effort. Get these CDs. Call in your support now, brothers and sisters. La luta continua.
212-209-2950. An important step on the road to making your future. 212-209-2950. I've been listening to these CDs as I've been editing, getting them fine-tuned for you. And each time I listen, I feel like I learn more, even though these are presentations for which I prepared, which I was present, and in which I'm listening again and again. I never tire, and that is something for me to say. I never tire of listening to this because each time I learn more, each time it becomes more a part of my life and my understanding, and I know this is going to be true of you. 212-209-2950.
Ralph and Maya, before you leave us this evening, it's 5:55 in the evening. Ralph is joining us. He just landed and called in to be a part of the program this afternoon. And Maya Schoen is on the line from California. I got a call, a pledge from a listener pledging a matching fund of $500. For Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, we would like to thank Elaine Kubiak in New York City. She's getting permanent war, but more importantly, she wanted to make it known that she wanted to put this matching fund out here to gain support for this program and this radio station. Most importantly, she wanted to let us know that she supports this radio station. The volunteer brought it back to me. Shante Rica is here with a number of other volunteers. There are 7 calls on the line now, and people are calling in for the program this afternoon to support the program, Permanent War, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The number is 212-209-2950. You can pledge using your Visa card, MasterCard, American Express. Electronically, you can do that. You could send a check or a money order. You could do that as well. But do make your calls right now. Open lines are available. We're waiting for your call right now. 212-209-2950.
Maya? Let's get all the lines lit up. We want to thank you, Elaine. Elaine is one of the Taking Aim listeners who contacts us, who corresponds with us, just as we'd like to hear from you, too. 212-209-2950. And you can reach us by email at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. Volunteer effort is important, but it takes more than volunteer effort to keep WBAI on the air. There are electricity bills, there is rent, there are a minimal staff. It would be so nice to have so much more money coming in so that WBAI can have a bigger staff and be able to present much larger avenue of programming and support and training programs than it is able to do right now. 212-209-2950, because your contribution keeps WBAI on the air, keeps Taking Aim on the air. Let's help Elaine, and let's reach this matching contribution. Thank you so much, Elaine. Ralph and I both thank you, and the listeners of Taking Aim all thank you. 212-209-2950. Again, I want to remind you, please go to www.nyc911initiative.org and call 646-537-1755. The 45,000 petition signatures must be collected by the end of April, so there isn't that much time left. And it's very important to have this new investigation, a real investigation, and not the whitewash that was the so-called 9/11 Commission report. Please donate to WBAI because you're donating to all of us. You're keeping Taking AIM on the air. You're keeping our access to you alive. 212-209-2950. And a word from Ralph.
Yes, brothers and sisters, Maya said it extremely well. This is an ongoing struggle. It is not a spectator sport. We're engaged in it together. So we look forward to your support and to hearing from you and your calling support for the station. Thank you so much, Sister Elaine. We look forward to being with you again next week. And we'll be doing what we have to do right here in Victoria at the, where there are a series of meetings on just these subjects with the same information and the same mobilization. It's a struggle across frontiers, brothers and sisters. Join it.
All right. Thank you very much, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Thank you for the program, Taking AIM, for this week. A minute before 6 o'clock in New York City at 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org. Coming up at 6 o'clock will be a report.